I slept and dreamt that life was joy. I awoke and saw that life was service. I acted and behold, service was joy, says Rabindranath Tagore, an eminent Indian polymath whose profound poetry and philosophical insights transcend time and culture. Called as the Bard of Bengal, his works resonate with universal themes of nature, human emotion, and harmony, inspiring generations worldwide. Hello, my name is Malati, and I'm your host on the show titled The Impressive Empress, where we celebrate and amplify the voices of women, bringing insightful conversations and stories and inspiration to empower more women and girls to embrace their power, purpose, and potential in all aspects of life. The idea behind this show is to understand what it takes for a woman to become a leader, to understand the journey from within, the journey to becoming a female leader with a higher purpose. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by another remarkable woman who has made a significant impact in the world of medicine through her extraordinary work. It's a privilege to engage in such conversations with these women leaders, exploring their journeys, challenges, triumphs, and leadership insights. Our guest for the day is Dr. Bindu Menon, a medical doctor, a health activist, and a visionary leader. She has been teaching for over 20 years, has 98 publications in her name, an editor of 2 books, and has 23 chapters to her credit. She heads the neurology department at the Apollo Hospitals at Nellore. Her extensive experience, remarkable contributions, and numerous accolades speak volumes about her dedication and expertise. Her involvement in various prestigious organizations, such as the Indian Epilepsy Association, and her roles in global initiatives like the World Stroke Organization and the World Federation of Neurology, underscore her commitment to addressing neurological disorders on a broader scale. The recognitions she has received, including awards like the ILAE Leadership Program Award and the Mrida Spirit of Neurology Award, highlights her significant impact and influence in her field. In all, she has received more than 33 awards. Moreover, her extensive publication record and editorship of books demonstrate her commitment to advancing medical knowledge and education. The initiatives she has spearheaded through the Dr. Bindu Menon Foundation, such as the Neurology on Wheels program and the development of telemedicine apps for stroke and epilepsy, showcase her innovative approach to improving healthcare accessibility and delivery. Overall, Professor Bindu Menon's contributions extend far beyond the confines of her hospital or academic institution, positively impacting healthcare delivery, research, and advocacy both nationally and internationally. Join me in this conversation with Dr. Bindu Menon, where she talks about innovation, creativity, and happiness, and a lot more. Namaskaram, Dr. Bindu Menon. It's such a pleasure to have you on our podcast, The Impressive Empress, where we talk to women leaders from various walks of life, trying to understand their inner journey to success. So this is a conversation that would definitely spark young minds to become more of the person that you are. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Malati. I suppose this is a different sort where you are giving me the privilege, to be on a platform of such a impressive, the name itself is as an empress, like. And also giving me an opportunity to look within myself, as we all know that we really don't have time during several of our works that we don't know what we are doing, why we are doing, and how we reach there. I suppose this should be a good conversation. Thank you so much for that.
Thank you, Bindu. That is that's such lovely words. Thank you so much. I see that you have you're very well qualified. You're a doctor in neurology and. You also have several super specializations to become a brain specialist. When did you know that you wanted to become a doctor? Or how did you craft yourself to become Dr. Bindu Menon that you are today?
Malti, in our school days, all of us know that when we reach our 10th class, that's 11th and 12th is the time where you need to choose what you become. I was privileged to be in a family where I had the complete decision on my hand. I could choose what I wanted to become. And healing was something which always used to give me so much of importance in my life. And I suppose it's a call, actually. And healing, as far as health is concerned, you can heal, you can make a person happy, you can make the whole family happy. But you don't realize it at that point of time. And you just feel that you are making somebody happy. I was always a happy person, actually. I like to be happy. I like people around me to be happy. I inculcate and tend to be around people who have got a positive mind and tendency and spread warmth across. In 10th and 11th, 11th and 12th, I should say, we started feeling that doctors are the one. When you go there, reach there, tell your complaints, the doctor prescribes something, puts a hand on your shoulder and gives you so much of warmth, and you immediately on the next day you get healed, you are so much better. So it was that healing touch and the tendency where we can serve somebody and make somebody better. That's where I sort of thought that, yes, medical is my calling and doctor is my calling. During that same time, you know, Malti, we used to have a HelpAge Foundation in the school where we were allowed to collect funds, you should say, door to door, and give it to the organization HelpAge India, which is an old age organization where people stay there. So I was also a part of that. So, you know, it's not that I like biology, so I went into medical field. I like something which is healing, curing, caring, that made me move towards something where there's a human touch to it and where I can, in fact, one-to-one interact with the person as well as to the family. At that point, you don't really know it. Now I really know it, that it was that which made me choose the medical field.
I mean, I just remember the famous quote by Steve Jobs, I think. He says, in hindsight, you're always able to connect the dots. It's a lovely calling that you've had, and I'm sure many patients of yours and the place where you are is definitely benefiting from all of the extended services that you have been doing. I'm particularly interested in knowing a little bit more about your work. You seem to be having a lot of innovative initiatives that bring about, you know, a lot of transformative changes in the societies. For example, your work on, the initiative Neurology on Wheels, or the tele-awareness programs and the health apps that you have brought. You know, all these have brought about impressive changes in the medical practices and, more importantly, patient outcomes. Can you share the inside story behind these initiatives? How do you get your innovative juices to flow like that?
Thank you so much, Malti. Again, it's a flow, you know. I suppose when you're working in a medical field at the initial stages of your, when you're doing your internship, then you enter your post-graduation, then you do your post-graduation. When you're a resident, you are completely drilled into work, you know. It's really difficult that I sometimes feel that there are two ways to survive that. Either you sink in it and then you just do a work and just do your medical work. That's it. Then there's a full stop onto it. Or you swim across to it, you know. As you swim across, you tend to understand that as a doctor, just when the patient comes to you and you cure them might not probably be sufficient in a medical field. Because where we can at least put a small mark to it, that where we can see that before the patient gets unwell, whether we can do a step forward, and that's what is prevention is called. From that point, when you have your outpatients, when you have your emergencies, every time you had a question off and on being asked by the patient's relatives, that could this have been prevented? Could we have done something about it? And that's how the initial stages of my awareness program started, and that's how the initial budding of the Dr. Bindu Menon Foundation also started. And in fact, you know, Malti, it started from my daughter's school, because when I used to go, because I was a doctor and I used to go and pick her up from the school. So the parents used to come in and ask me, the teachers used to come in and ask me. Then one of them said, "Madam, can we just invite you? And could you just give a talk to the teachers and to the parents who would be there?" So, you know, it started of that. So from there it started, and now we have almost completed around 224 awareness programs, 240, I should say. That is the prevention part that we as a foundation do. But going into the villages, going into the rural areas, because when I sit in my clinic, I get a sector of population who come and reach me. You all of us know that neurology as a super specialty, or for that matter, any super specialty, is out of reach from the rural community. The rural community still has to survive in that same belt with that same specialization, and then has to move forward. And at some point, they reach a super specialty. But then by the time, so much time has lost, and the disease has progressed, has become stagnant, and there's not much that we can do about. Now, I might not make a great change, but then I can be a game changer. I can probably start something which can be replicated in other parts of the country. And I get calls asking me how you have done this. And I tell them that this is the way I go about. I always say that work is a pleasure. You need to be happy while you're working. If you have to be completely you. You need to have a sense of fulfillment while you have completed it. And even if the whole day is notoriously busy, at the end of the day, you know, that sense of fulfillment is there. You sleep well and you get ahead for the next day morning to see. And apart from your clinical work is extremely crammed, you know, from morning till evening, you're completely with the emergencies, outpatients, referrals, calls from other patients, something or the other, it keeps going. But then in that whole scenario, if you have a sense of fulfillment and you are motivated to do something, you'll always find time, you know, you'll always find time in that 24 hours. People do ask me, as you have asked me, that where do you find time? I feel that you can chip in your time. The only thing is that you need to love what you're doing. You need to enjoy what you're doing. And there should be a sense of fulfillment. And obviously, there's a teamwork that that backs you around. And unless that is there, a one-man pillar is definitely not possible. Your ideas, innovations are just standing there. You have the whole population around with you. You need to take them along. You need to inculcate, and you need to take their ideas, pinch in, and everything put into the same platform. It's a journey of pleasure. It's a journey of happiness. And I suppose that's what helps me to do what I do every day.
Strong woman stands up for herself. A stronger woman stands up for everybody else. I'm kind of reminded of that quote when I see what you're doing. And I think it's more of your curiosity, your creativity, and time and again, I kind of think of your patient-centeredness. This attitude is what is driving you to do all of this. And kind of mindsets that you carry helps you cultivate creativity and makes you stay open to new ideas within your practice.
One may always feel that one has finished a saturation point and that's done. I have a good practice. I'm working well. I've done some couple of innovative programs, and that's where I can now take a back seat and just relax and just carry on with what's happening. But as you have been putting into one or two quotes, I too remember that it said that no matter how good you are, you can always get better, you know. So and I feel that's an exciting part, you know, because you can get better. You can better yourself to doing that. So innovativeness is that there are problems everywhere. Malti, one thing cannot solve everything. So if you find there is a problem, and if you find that there is a solution to it, which one can address and one can sort of make some change into it, then you should be having an open mind. Second thing is that if you are able to find an innovative technology or whatever ways to get through it, it's also the perseverance that is important. So whatever you see across, whatever you see as an output from my side, as my foundation side, there may be so many other couple of things which I have done, which have not completely come out as well. But there are certain ones which, if you continue to do it and if you feel that you will be able to carry it on till the end and you will be able to complete it, then you should persevere it. And perseverance is, I feel that all of these projects, Malati for that matter, my neurology on wheels, the apps which I have made, the tele-awareness programs or whatever, had hurdles at every point of time, you know, but every hurdle made me think whether I can stop it, or whether I should take a pause, or whether I should take it after some time. Few of them, I definitely would have had to shelf it. But most of it, I should say around more than 95% of the projects, I have continued to do it. It might have taken time. So innovation, for innovative mind, the problem is around you. You need to target whether you are able to achieve it, whether you are able to persevere it, whether you are able to complete it. If so, then you should build in a team. You should have people around you. See that what's the good in each person, because that's very important. It's the, as it is said, that there's a difference between a leader and a boss, you know. The boss says go and the leader says let's all go. So that let's all go probably is there in me. I take everybody in my stride. So it's not only work and we enjoy, laugh, go out. And the whole 24 hours, even when we are in work, even when we are in a rural project, you would see that it's such a nice, it's sort of a festivity into the rural areas that we do that. So basically, it's now inculcated in the whole being. It's in your whole being that if you are able to identify a problem, is there something which I, as a person, can chip in and make a small change in the society, which can be helpful to a couple of people around. I am not saying everybody, but some couple of people, and it will touch them and their family and the society at large.
Open-mindedness, perseverance, teamwork and collaboration are some of the things that you just mentioned that helps with bringing out innovative projects. Somewhere along the line, you mentioned about perseverance, and that brings me to my next point, which is about endurance and burnout. You seem to be wearing multiple hats and doing a multitude of things. It's almost like being on a constant marathon. Do you ever get bored or bogged down in neurological terms or in the brain health, a burnout? How do you manage all of this? You know, we all have these 24 hours, like you mentioned. But beyond the passion, what keeps you going? What's the secret?
Yes, Malati, you're completely right. Any individual person will definitely get burnt out at some point of time. It is. I would be lying if I say I don't. I am 365 days, 24/7. I'm a positive-minded person and I do everything. No, absolutely not. So there are bad days, you know, there are days when you feel that, have you taken too much on your head, whether you would be able to carry it on. There's so many pending works, 24 hours doesn't seem enough. I have not spent time with myself. I have not had a day where I've just relaxed, put on the TV, washed and put on a movie and did all of that stuff. But you know, Malati, there's an innate passion in one person. If that is there, this sort of burnt out and negative feelings or low mood doesn't sustain for a long time. Also because while you are in your workplace or while you're in any of your projects, one should not be doing your work as a sort of a duty, or sometimes it's like a punishment. If you are enjoying your work, if you are enjoying your work, whether for that matter, I always say that when I am talking to my patients, most of my patients who are following up for 10 or 15 years with me, they've almost become like an extended family to me. The ones who are now new ones adding into my consultations, I should say, they are the ones who are infantile people who are adding into this. So some of them are there when they come in, they talk to me, they grab my hand, some of them hug me. The elder people, they just put their hands on my face. All of that, I'm telling you, is such a pleasurable thing. It's like a dopamine surge for me. in that way, I feel that if you connect to your people, because I'm a doctor, I have to connect to my patient. If you connect to your patients, if you love your work, if you have a good-minded, positive-minded people around you, a teamwork people, who also tend to laugh, smile, there is so much of less of negativity. Even if I'm burnt out on particular days, there's somebody who tells me, who's by my side, who is sort of emanating positive energy from one nook and corner. And on top of all of that, I have such lovely family with me. My parents, I should say. I should say that I'm so much less percentage of positivity in me like my dad and mom. Oh my God, you should see the way from my childhood days, the work that they do, it's such an orchestrated, like a symphony, you know. Both of them, from morning till night, I've never seen them getting tired most of the time. Most of the time when I'm out, they must be getting tired and wanting to put in a positive face. I don't know. It used to be so nice. I've seen them working now. They stay with me and I get a cup of tea from my mother in the morning and I get a plate. She gets up early. So, you know, all these positive vibes across you, it's not only oneself, the positive vibes with which you grew up, with which you got tuned into, less of negativity around you. When you have people who have negative thoughts, negative talk, negative conversations, I tend to stride away from them because I feel that I get engulfed in it and I might talk something and I might start conversing in that and taking somewhere my mind somewhere. So I steer out of all of that. So putting in a nutshell so long, I said that it's like being around people and having a positive attitude helps you to come out of your burnt out days, which you would definitely have. It's just not possible that one does not have when there's too much on your basket. But it's not only me, it's my people around me, my parents, my daughter, my brother, my team, my friends, my colleagues, my patients, everybody. And then once in a while when people like Malathi interview me, now this will go on a long way for at least a couple of months. Oh my God. So, okay, I have something which I can contribute to the society. So I should be like this and I shouldn't be like this. It's there in the back of the mind. And thank you so much for more couple of months to be on the positive side.
This is going to carry me through the entire year, I think. But I'm going to ask you to dig a little deeper and tell me, what are some of the sustainable strategies that you follow on a daily basis to help you stay so positive, other than surrounding yourself with positive people? Because it is definitely, mental health is a big issue. I mean, I shouldn't be telling you that. But definitely all of this, you know, working, I'm sure you work more than 16, 17 hours a day. And you also don't take time off during your weekends. You also work during the weekends. This is definitely putting a lot of pressure on your time and the physical energy. So the stamina, the mental stamina, the physical stamina, all of this requires a constant training. So what are the strategies you use to stay on top of things?
Multi simple strategies from my side. I love music very much. So one thing which as soon as I enter my house, enter my room, everywhere I am, I'll put on some music. And there are some couple of music which I like very much. Some Hindi music, which I'm very fond of. So everywhere there would be music and they would be all positive-minded music only. Very lovely old songs. So that personally for me, it gives me a boosting. While I'm having my breakfast also morning, there would be music around. There'll be songs around. While in my room also, there would be songs around. I try my best, Malathi, to have a walk every day, whatever time it is, even if it is around 10 to 15 minutes in the morning or 10 to 15 minutes in the evening. And I propagate this and I tell all my patients that some form of physical activity does build in your mental health. It goes a long way. It doesn't happen in a month, but then you sustain that physical activity. If you carry it for half an hour, one hour, and go for the gym as well, then it gives you more well-being, a sense of well-being, and also helping you to keep your mental health in a very fit and a sustainable state, I should say, that helps you a long way around. I put in my, sometimes when I am too bored and I feel that academics, research or any of my activities are just out of my, you know, the zigzag that is going on in the brain, I pen in some poems. I write once in a while, whenever the thoughts are just, I should say, they're itching my hand to write it down. I just put one or two blocks like that. So any of these, I feel extracurricular ones. And then I do draw, which I don't put anywhere because they're so horrible. But then when once it is done, they're so horrible that it makes me laugh as well. I share it with my daughter and say, Beta, I've done this. Can you identify what I have done? Then she says, it does look like a face, Mama. I said, it is. So, you know, small pleasures while we were a kid, I do all of that, write poetries or write some blogs or, and then once in a while, read as well, which often, off lately, it's getting lesser and lesser because by the time you read one page, then it's time to go off to sleep as well. So small things, I should say, out of my basket of my things, I'm not sure whether it helps anyone, but it does help me.
I mean, when I was going through your profile, I was really amazed and I thought to myself, gosh, how does she find time for all of this? You've written in the meantime about 38 poems, I think, and it certainly does kind of help you in your mental and physical well-being, and therefore you're able to contribute better to the society. But how do you find the time for such creativity, and how did you actually know that you had this passion for writing poems?
Malti, it was the first poem was while I was at home, and I think it was a patient with motor neuron disease. I was really, I had conversed with the patient and the relatives that this disease doesn't have a treatment. And that's how I was feeling so bad. And I suppose when it was told in movies and all, I think when you are in a sad mood, a lot of emotions flow out. And that's when I just penned it off. When I penned it off, I felt that I can. I didn't publish it at that time. It means publishing is just putting on my website, you know. Then I thought that on Doctor's Day, I should write about doctors. Why not? Let me see how I can. Then it became a journey. You know that you can write. But then it's so surprising, Malti, that somebody tells me that, madam, why don't you write like that? I suddenly go black. I can't write anything. But then when I feel like it, so when do I feel like it? When I go for my neurology on wheels, sometimes it's an hour for me to reach there. And I have nothing. I don't carry any of my gadgets to write or do anything. So that's when I just have a paper and a pen. So I start scribbling and I just scribble and just scribble and just write para. It is not compiled properly. And then after one or few days or so, I start compiling it. So it's not that I sit on one day and with a glass, with a cup of coffee or tea, and then the rain and there is breeze and there's, but it never happened like that. Sometimes when I go to meet my daughter, where I'm sitting on the flight, I pen down another 4 or 5 lines. So it comes off like that. And if you ask me to write now, if you ask me to say, put on some few lines, I will never have it in myself. So it just flows off. But when it flows and I feel that I want to write, then I leave off everything else. And I just concentrate on that. Because when it's on your finger and when it's on your mind, it has to go onto the paper. If not, then it will lose because you are already balked by so much of other work. So that I do that. When you have it, you write it down. Whether it comes out well or not well, you have that whole emotion for that particular topic which flows out onto the paper.
I remember this famous author, and she said, the universe comes and gives you thoughts. And if you don't put it to paper, it's just going to take a search for the next person. Yes. It's always the case, and I have experienced that also. Tell me, Bindu, what is more difficult, the writer's block or a diagnosis?
I suppose diagnosis would be easy, Malti, because we have been we have been in it. Obviously, all diagnoses are not the same. There are difficult patients with difficult problems. But then we are in it. You are from morning till night. You are onto the medical part of it. The writer's blog is something, you know, sometimes you want to emote something, but you do not find the proper words to touch another person's heart. But you know that this is what I want to say and put it on. So then that, you know, you keep scribbling, you keep scribbling. You want to, you don't want to have something which is just put on paper. You want that to touch somebody in some way, in some form, so that it changes the attitude of that person, not in a medical way, but in some other way in that person. So I feel that that's more difficult, you know, it's absolutely difficult.
Have there been instances where your creativity as a poet has kind of given you insights into your work or into some kind of a complex diagnosis? Can you share some any instances?
Malti, not as a from my poems, but from my blog writing. I think I've just done two. But yes, as a when I started writing my blog, we always feel that patients and relatives are not putting in their maximum to help the patient to come out of the illness. But when I started writing in one of the blogs, which I have written about a patient and the caregiver, especially the caregiver, how much she struggled to see that keeping the house intact, keeping the patient and everything, I felt that it gave me an insight into the problems. And this happened many years ago, but I put it in paper then. So that day had changed me, the way I converse with the patient and the relatives. And it gives me a sort of an overview as to what I can expect out of them. Then it gives me an overview of what I should be counseling to them as well. So it has definitely changed the way of how I should give them a comprehensive game plan of expectations, outcome, and the prognosis for a particular patient, depending upon their social well-being as well as the family structure.
Yeah, interesting. It's a constant study. I think there's a lot of research being done as to how the creative or the arts can influence a person in a very positive way. And it definitely brings in a very different perspective. I would now like to talk to Bindu Menon as a woman who's heading the neurology department in the very famous Apollo hospitals. How does the dynamics work there as a woman?
Malti, I feel I'm privileged to be with people. I'm privileged to be born in a family, one at that point where there were no difference between myself and my brother. Me being a girl at that point, then later as a woman, the same privileges were there for me as well as my brother. And I am born and brought up in Bhopal, and I studied in the Kama Convent School. And later I did my MBBS from Bhopal itself. Then I did my MD from Gwalior. All of those places, I personally did not have any differentiation as far as I am concerned. Now, definitely, Malti, I might be one of the privileged ones, but I have seen, I have known where there are differences as far as gender is concerned. And people have, girls and women have had to struggle. As far as my workplace also, I feel that I'm surrounded by people who are very nice. And particularly as a woman, as a gender bias, I have not had much to face. Maybe it's how you take people around you. Probably it's yourself that makes people to be as a part of teamwork. Or maybe, Malti, there could be that I'm not able to see also what's happening around me. So the negativity around me, because probably I don't want to see them. That could also be I'm turning a blind eye to all of that also there. I have a very congenial atmosphere. My colleagues are extremely good. My my management is good. My people around me have always been helpful. There are so many of my team members, and particularly all of them are boys, young boys. Who come out with me for my neurology and wheels camp. And my salute and my thankfulness is always with them.
definitely you've been quite lucky there. I don't know if lucky is the word, but I would like to ask you if you have any unique strategies that you as a woman employ, not just to survive, but to thrive in the ever-changing, unpredictable world of VUCA, as they call. But today it is like there's a lot of disruption, volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous, and diverse times. We have all of them. What are your strategies for managing this? Is it different for a woman? And how is it different?
Yeah, Malti, it is definitely different. One's ambitions always have to be limited there. And there has to be a little changes the one has to make. Like you cannot do certain things in certain time zones. You cannot move out and individually go and talk to certain sector of people. You will have to have some people around you. You cannot just drive off and find out what's happening there. You cannot do that. Your society has not grown to that stage that I may have good intentions in my mind, but everybody is looking at things might and they're still the same medieval stage. So you need to keep all that into the right perspective. As a woman, there are different situations where one may need to take a backstage as well. Definitely all are there. But having said that, if you take that all into the perspective and you plan your day, you have strategized as to what is the priority for you. In your outpatient clinics, in your emergencies, in the hospitals, definitely, there is no need to prioritize anything as a gender role, I would say. But yes, in my campaigns, when you're going visiting villages, when you're going to for your awareness programs, anything, yes, definitely. You may have to have people around you. You may have to have a sector of people around you who would want to take this initiative for you at the initial stage and talk to the people head. And then they get back to me. And then I take the leap forward.
So how do you handle such things? What mindsets do you carry to help you carry on with your mission during such times?
I suppose, Malati, you should have a purpose in mind. The motto is the purpose at the end of the day, while you are, as I said, you can sink or swim there. So while you're swimming, your target is as to where you have to reach. Definitely, there will be several turmoils in between, and you will have to just see through them. You'll have to just leave it off. Some which you feel that it is a hindrance, and it is not going to go off. Then you will have to be one-to-one to it. Yeah. So everything cannot be overseen, you know. You have some of them, you have to take it one-on-one. And then I suppose one-on-one is not always fighting. One-on-one is trying to justify what you are doing, trying to get the other person to reach your wavelength of reality of what you're trying to do. Sometimes the person across doesn't know as to why I as a person I'm doing certain things. So trying to get across to them, because now I have some projects with me. I'm going into village. Why I'm going into the village? Is there an ulterior motive to me? There is an ulterior motive to me that I want to help. That's only ulterior motive, and there's no other ulterior motive. So now people have understood that. The initial parts, it was not there. Why is it being? Why are you compromising on your time? Why are you moving out of the realms of comfort and moving on to a place? So now people know that, yes, this is what. So once it you get one-on-one to some sectors and population and people as to this is what it is, you might have to have some cross discussions over a couple of times. Then I think that is done.
Lovely. Definitely, this requires a lot of patience. As a woman in medicine, how can you build that resilience and tenacity to be on your mission?
It's if happiness is a method of life, Malati, and it's not a destination. So the way I tell my patients as well, that don't try to be happy. Be happy. There's the difference there. If you are going out of the way and finding the means and methods to be happy, then you're really not being happy. You know, you are in search of happiness. Why do you need to be in search of happiness? One, if you're what you're doing, you're liking it, you're loving it, you are having a measurable sense of satisfaction to it, then you are happy about it. So, Malti, I am very happy with my work. I love to work. I'm a workaholic, but then it's not because you should work. If you work 24 hours a day, your output is going to be good. You'll put in so much of papers. No, it's not that. I like to. I don't think I would. I see myself an end stage that I'll sit at home and just be relaxed, because I might not be happy with that. So that resilience comes again. As I say, I am brought up in a family where I saw my parents. They were always very hardworking. Even if there's somebody to work for them, mommy would see that everything is clean. She's a homemaker. She's an excellent cook. She takes care of us. There was never a time where I felt that they were just unnecessarily lazy. They obviously take a rest, but then they were unnecessary. So that builds into your system where work is a pleasure. Happiness is a method of life. It's not a destination. And then there's a full stop to it. Then there is no way that you need to overstretch your 24 hours. You need to overstretch your 365 days to get something and seek something.
Lovely. It sounds very, it sounds to me that you're quite spiritual also. Do you do something for your spiritual rejuvenation on a daily basis?
No, not at all.
Not at all? Okay. Nice.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, no.
Yes. Okay. I see that you had a meeting with our President Murmu. Can you share your experience with her and what did you share with her?
Oh, Malti, that was awesome, you know. Actually, we completed a decade of foundation activities, and our overarching work has flown into all the sectors, and I got a privilege of meeting President Madam and sharing the book in which all of our activities there. And Malti, Madam is so nice. She made me sit, and whatever I was talking to her, she took the conversation forward. She appreciated, she applauded, and also said that continue to do that. And in the end, Madam just said that service to man is service to God. And you are doing something very tremendous. And Malti, it was so, I can just feel it today. Now, while I'm sitting, when I was entering in, I was a little anxious as to what I should say. Should I stand, bow, or how I should keep my posture, you know? I didn't know that. But Madam put me at so much to ease, and she conversed with such ease and comfort, and kept on the conversation. And at the end, when she said that, it was really awesome. It really gives you more dopamine to work more and better for the betterment of the society.
That must have been one unforgettable experience. But how do you convey that trust to all the stakeholders? You work not just in India, but you also work on international projects. You have been invited to a lot of conferences. You have presented a lot of papers. You do collaborative works on books and articles. How do you convey that you're dependable and trustworthy?
So every step you take, Malati, leaves a foundation behind for another step and the project. And the previous step and the foundation which has made a mark and which has made a measurable change in whatever it may be, either it is a form of a collaboration, either it is a form of a project, patient care, research. Then the second step or multiple stakeholders to come in and get collaborated with you becomes easy. So as I said, if you start a work, your perseverance should see to it that you complete the work. Half-heartedly, leaving anything unfinished will definitely not have a good being on yourself as well as to people who are working for you, who have put in their time, energy, as well as money for whatever it is. It will not hold good. So one thing, finish it completely. do it with wholeheartedly,
put in your maximum and put in your best and deliver what you have committed to at that point of time.
Amazing advice there. Tell me if you have mentors and how many do you have? How did you find your first one?
Malti, actually, again, I say my parents are my mentors, you know. So I keep telling because they have not had any mentorship as to how I should become a doctor. But I personally feel a person's personality and the self-imbibed virtues from your parents, from your upbringing, goes a long way. This has taught me discipline, sense of time, to value other people's time, to respect other people, and to have a sense of gratitude. Always, always be humble. Whatever, wherever, and any place you reach, you always have, as I said earlier, that there is something that you can always better yourself. And that's something. And I feel they have been the best mentors to me. It may look strange, but my daughter is my mentor. Because there have been times where I have been on my low and I talk to them. They are the new gen people. They are more sorted out, I feel. We are more emotional and, you know, we get carried away by should I not? So when you ask them, you know, they're more sorted out. They give answers in one line, you know. And then you suddenly feel, oh my God, it was that simple. I didn't realize that. My teachers all the way. My teacher is Dr. B.S. Singhal. Recent Padma Shri awardee as well. Sir's whole personality, demeanor, how he is with the patient, talks less, imbibes more, fast diagnosis, patient care. Few virtues which I keep, keep in my pocket still, which helps me to do what I am today. My other teachers who have been over the period of time during my training program have been helpful. But then more or less after that, it has been a self-made person, Malti, correcting yourself, making yourself better and the best and trying to be and remaining there.
Do you also mentor younger women who want to become leaders or pioneers in medicine?
Yes, I do that, Malati. I have a lot of students who are with me at this point of time. A couple of students have written some projects, written some articles, papers, and I see to it that they whatever maximum is possible at their stage of life, I can tell them, get them, and make them reach there. I do my maximum. So I take a particular interest, I should say maybe biased, to help young girls because they may not have the opportunity later to have a mentor, even if it is a short visit, say 1 year with me. But yes, I do that. In fact, Malti, just wanting to chip in here, that wouldn't come as a mentorship, but my patients, you know, if they are young girls, and especially if they are girls with epilepsy, you know how the societal stigma is. The parents tend to say that now we're going to get her married. Now it's another 1 year and we would see to it that she's getting married. I will put in my foot and try to make them understand that first, let her stand on her feet. Empower that girl first. She may not need a job, but she definitely needs an education. If not today, tomorrow. Even if it is a supporting husband or not. Even if it is a supporting family or not. Even if the whole society is not with her. She can stand on her feet. And she can get everything that is available for her. For medication, for whatever it is. So I see that each and every of my patients, especially the persons with epilepsy, because there's a stigma around that particular disease. Otherwise also, I'll see that they complete the education. See that education can have fetch a job for them at any point in time, even in crisis, even if it is to support her own family at a later point of time. And I do that as a particular interest in all my outpatient cases.
one impressive work that you're doing there with not just as a doctor, but also as a woman supporting young girls also find their footing. I would love to move to the most important and often asked question of the work-life balance. Seeing your background with all those certificates of appreciation and awards and all that, I would like to understand how you manage your work and your personal life as a mother and as a doctor. How has it been your journey all these years? And what are the priorities and what are the sacrifices you had to take at every stage of your life?
That's tricky and sentimental as well. So definitely as a doctor itself, all of myself and as all my colleagues have had to sacrifice their family life to a large extent, you know, because it is definitely not possible to be at home by evening. Your hours are not fixed. You might get calls, especially in the early stage of career. When you get a little more senior, you have more colleagues to be around you. So the sharing of responsibilities do happen. But when you're early age and you're in a prime of your career, there have been times where I have spent less and less with my family, been in the hospital, been in the emergencies. There have been times where I had to miss my daughter's school, picking up from school, which I love very much, you know, because that's the time when children are very vocal. The whole day, whatever has happened, they would just vomit it out, I feel. And that's the time we can catch everything and keep it. By the time you reach home by 7:38, they are also so tired. You can't ask, beta, what happened today? So they will say, nothing, mama. So it's just a statement. So yes, I have missed all that. I would have liked to spend more time with my parents as well. I should have helped in many ways. I don't know. I try to be a good daughter, but I'm not sure whether I have fulfilled as far as my time constraints are concerned. But that is, while I was just a doctor and I was just doing my medical profession, but as my foundation activities also started entering in, I did a small change. You know, when I used to go on my village camps, my family travels with me. So it's on a weekend. It's like a picnic. You know how it is in village, you know, the villages are so open and they are so warm hearted. They would, after the whole camp, then they will all come, then they will serve you food. They will treat you as if you are a guest of the village. And it's nice to be pampered, you know, but then you get pampered with your whole family. So I have seen to it that when I travel in certain places where I can, I do it with my family so that I can be with them in whatever. And again, as I said, everyone may not have a supportive family as mine. They also understand that my daughter travels with me when she can. But then, yes, having said that, that's not enough. So much of time, so much of occasions, so much of planning, so much of outings, which I would have definitely wanted, I did not have. I would not have. But then you cannot have everything, Malati. You need to strike a balance if you want that or this. And I definitely want this. The whole family wants this. And this gives us a sense of commitment and this gives us a sense of fulfillment as well. So we somewhere strike the balance in between and manage it. And everybody is okay with that.
Like all good things do have to come to an end. So should our conversation. But I would like to close with rapid fire questions. Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
How do you unwind after a long day's work?
With music.
What is the toughest decision you had to make thus far in your profession?
That's a difficult one. I can't remember.
Okay. What is the top time management tip for balancing different roles effectively?
Putting it in diary at the beginning of the day as to what are your priorities and when you would address those activities.
Key mentorship lesson that you learned as a woman in medicine?
Be balanced. Have your priorities clear, focused, and move forward with it, even if there are 1,000 hurdles.
What do you see as the biggest opportunity for women in medicine today?
It's an open field. The field is open for both men and women equally. There's no hurdle.
Okay. With more than 33 awards, how do you define success?
Success is fulfillment. I feel that if every day is a fulfilling day for me and I have completed what I wanted to achieve, then I suppose I'm happy and happiness is a success for me.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Bindu Menon, for taking this time out and sharing your happy tips. It has been, happiness is just exuding out of you. And I'm really grateful for all the work that you're doing, impacting numerous lives through your multiple initiatives. Keep doing what you're doing and let's stay in touch.
Thank you so much, Malati. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for listening in. I hope you liked this conversation and found it inspiring. If you think this could help transform minds, please feel free to share this podcast widely with your friends. You can listen to the Impressive Empress podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Samsung Podcasts, JioSaavn, Amazon Music, and many more. Got a question that you want me to ask our next guest? Do write to me at empress@bhogya.online. That's empress@bhogya.online. Bye until the next time and take care.